He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
Mauricio drives one deep to left field. Back goes Castro near the wall. And he can't make the play. Doobie! Mauricio Dubon spikes the helmet. Back-to-back walk-off for the Astros. 2-1.
Doobie with a big swing.
Doobie, do it.
Thank you very much for that, Julia Morales. Jeff Blum getting excited about it. New father, Mauricio Dubon, on his first Father's Day, had a walk-off, should have been caught by the Minnesota Twins. Oh, well, you take it, you'll love it. Yesterday, in a 2-1 win for the Astros over Minnesota, they have now won 5 in a row. That's their longest winning streak of the year. They are 11 games over 500. That is their best mark of the year at 41-30. They are 4.5 games up in the American League West, with a bunch of games on the road against the Athletics and Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim on deck. And even cooler, they're getting closer and closer to the top of the American League. They are a game and a half out of the 2 seed in the American League behind the Yankees, who were swept by the Red Sox over the weekend. And they are 4 games back of the American League leading Detroit Tigers. I think there were a lot of people going into the year that thought there was a chance the Astros fall off just because they lost 3 big names: Alex Bregman, Kyle Tucker, to a lesser extent, Ryan Presley, and they were expecting what's happening to the Orioles to finally happen to the Astros. Yet again, these Rasputin-ass MFers continue to ignore death and keep on fighting through all of the injuries that we have talked about. Sean's laughing.
I really like the Rasputin.
You can't kill him.
I do. I think we found the Astros comparison.
Rasputin? No one likes him.
No one likes something mystical and weird about it.
Right.
But we're not sure if it's con man or actual tapping into something.
Lots of success. Maybe not from a military perspective, but
That was out of his...
Rasputin was banging everything. For those who don't know, Rasputin was a noted bleep boy.
Yeah.
He was one of the first, okay? And this guy was advising the Tsar of Russia how to do everything. Not particularly well, so maybe that's where the comparisons die off. But he was unkillable. And famously, when they tried to kill him, he kept on surviving, being shot, thrown in a river, etc.
Poisoned,
etc. Yeah. Look it up for yourself. The death of Rasputin is one of the more, like, what?
Yeah, even in his assassination, he gets assassinated 3 different times.
Correct. It's insane that he was able to survive. I actually watched a movie in this Russian activity class that I had in middle school, and I learned a word from that, because they all say if in the middle, they basically all put their hands in the middle. They go like, smerta Rasputin, which means death to Rasputin. Smert means death in Russian. Anyway, the Astros keep on avoiding smert. They are Rasputin-esque. How? Why? Is this Joe Espada? Serious question. I ask it because Sean and I have believed this as long as we've been doing the show, that a manager's impact on a team is limited. You know, last year, for all the criticism that Espada got, I would point to the bats are not hitting. Joe Espada cannot hit for the Astros. I would have pointed the same thing to some of the criticism during the Dusty Baker era. And you could probably make the same case for going all the way back to the A.J. Hinch era. Managers often take the blame for things that are not their fault. But do they deserve credit when things are going well for the team, when they are the guys who are generally filling out a lineup card? Especially now in 2025, when the general manager, Dana Brown, in this case, generally across baseball, has more input on what a team does on a day-to-day basis than the actual manager does these days. Salaries reflect that.
I don't know what Dana Brown is making. I would imagine he's making more than Joe Espada. Could be wrong on that front. Whatever the case, is this where you give Joe Espada credit, or do you give Dana Brown credit, or do you give both these guys credit? I mean, clearly the Astros players can succeed under Joe Espada. That leads me to believe, especially since he has been around for a very long time, maybe not in a full-time manager role, that they like him. So morale's good, and that's big for a baseball team. So does he deserve credit for holding this thing together, for some of the lineup tinkering, or is this more on Dana Brown? I'm leaning towards Dana Brown. I think that what he has somehow figured out a way to do, especially with this holding this bullpen together with bubblegum and rubber bands and paper clips and whatever. I mean, you went from going into the year having, ideally, your starting rotation be Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown. Most teams in baseball would kill for that 1-2 at the top. But you were thinking, okay, who's our number three? Ronel Blanco, I guess. Is he going to be able to do what he did last year as a 30-year-old rookie? I'm exaggerating a little bit. By the way, he's got Tommy John surgery now. Hey, we got this Hayden Wisniewski guy. He's got some nasty stuff. Gets a lot of strikeouts. Oh, he's getting Tommy John surgery too. All right. There's that AJ Blueball guy that we bring up from time to time. There's Ryan Gusto. Screw it. He's huge. See what happens. Colton Gordon. Brandon Walter. Because we're running out of arms. Lance McCullers is back, actually. He's alive. That's fun, but we can't pitch him every single day, so we're going to have to use these other young guys a lot. Maybe Christian Javier will be back. Maybe Luis Garcia will be back. Maybe J.P. France will be back. What? It's working. It's working. It shouldn't work. So do I give the manager credit? Do I give the general manager credit for just throwing stuff at the wall and it all working?
And how about the Kyle Tucker trade being...
That's been pretty good, though. Wisniewski's not playing. Paredes has been better than we thought he would be.
Yes.
And Cam Smith has been adequate, and we all think he still has huge, tremendous upside.
Yeah. So, I mean, just that...
That trade has worked out.
That move, not alone, but that move just in itself, you're just like, oh, okay. Like, the stuff that we're down on during this offseason and that we were kind of wait and see on so far... I mean, he shouldn't do this, but Dana Brown could take a victory lap on the Kyle Tucker trade. Like, he might end up looking really good, especially, you know, when we see that Kyle Tucker contract number that the Astros, like, there's no way in hell they're going to sign that. So, I tend to, and this isn't, like, not surprising, like you said, about how you and I just view baseball. It's like, I give it more to Dana Brown, but I do think that Joe Espada still... deserves some of the credit for sure. Just for hanging, like keeping this group like together and keeping this and finding a way to get all these mismatching parts and this, you know, there's however many guys that are bouncing up and down between the Space Cowboys and the Astros on his pitching staff, whether they're starters, whether they're relievers. He is doing something of making this team like stick together in some way, like the clutch hitting and stuff. I'm not sure how much Espada has to do with that, but I do think that the like general attitude and the general like demeanor that this team has, I think he deserves a little bit of credit for that.
Yeah. I for sure believe you on that front.
Cause this isn't the, you know, the core of the 2017 and 2019 guys that to me, you know, as long as Correa and Bregman were here, along with Altuve, even Verlander, when he came back, it was a little bit of like, that is the culture. It's just those guys. Like, we talk about, you know, teams having a specific culture. To me, the Astros culture was like those five guys that they had. And at this point now, you've taken, you know, Jenga style, you've just taken them all out, and the tower's still standing up. So I think that Espada deserves credit for some of that because these guys that are coming through for the Astros right now, I mean, I guess other than Pena and Altuve and Framber, none of them really have done the big winning on the Astros, have been key parts of huge winning teams in the Astros' past. It is a new group.
It's a new group. So I'm with you. Probably more credit for Dana Brown than Joe Espada, but Espada gets some. And a lot of the decisions you make are gambles. Letting Alex Bregman walk, at least over the last 15 games, looks like it was the smart decision. Now, Bregman's numbers on the year, they're very good.
Yeah, he was really good before he got hurt.
299 with a 938 OPS, but he's injured right now, and in the last 15 games before he was hurt, he was hitting 259. So come back to down to earth after a great start, because we all saw the numbers at first, especially while the Astros were slow out of the gates. Meanwhile, Kyle Tucker, who plays for a Cubs team that is 44-28 for what it's worth, is dealing with a finger issue as well. So, hey, are these guys all of a sudden terrible now that they've left the Astros? No. But those gambles have not hurt the Astros either. And yeah, that goes back more to Dana Brown. So Brown gets most of the credit. Spotty gets a little bit as well. And there's another guy who we all have to, I think, start doing our part. I'm doing my part. What am I talking about? This man needs your help. We'll talk about him on the other side. It's the Paul Gallant Show. This Houston app.
Text Community Bank Studios. It's the Paul Gallant Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Most interactive sports talk show in town. This Astro needs your help. I'm talking about Jeremy Pena. Jeremy Pena needs your help today. Pena has been incredible. For those who did not pay attention, Jeremy Pena had a four-hit performance in Friday's beatdown of the Twins. The Astros did sweep the Twins over the weekend, 10-3. A 4-for-5 performance. He has been better than anyone expected. And if you do want to point at one player and one decision, and maybe this goes towards, hey, more credit for Joe Espada, or maybe it goes to more credit for Dana Brown. But since the Astros have moved Jeremy Pena into the leadoff spot, Pena has been simply incredible. To the point where Jose Altuve is willing to say, quote, he's definitely our best player right now. The way he shows up every day, he runs every ball out hard. He's hitting really good, playing really good defense. I think he's going to be an all-star, and he's going to be in the MVP conversation. Since moving to that lead-up spot, we have seen Pena rise the ranks. He is, as far as wins above replacement, number one at shortstop. Now, going to be tough with Bobby Witt from Kansas City in the conversation. Going to be tough with some of the other guys. You got Jacob Wilson of the A's, who's second in the majors in batting average. You got the Angels' Zach Neto. But Pena has been incredible. And since moving up to that lead-up spot, I mean, you've really seen it. Since April 27th, the Astros were averaging 3.54 runs a game at that moment in time. They're averaging 4.44 runs since then. And in 43 starts in the leadoff spot, Pena has a 373, 413, 554 slash line. Multiple hits in 22 of those 43 games since moving to the lead-up spot. So basically in more than half, slightly more than half. 373. I mean, you don't see that anymore. If you take a look at the complete all-star ballot standings for the American League right now, and you take a look at shortstops, Pena's in trouble. I know that there are some ways that it's not 100% based off of the vote for the All-Star game, right? Like there's a little bit of coach discretion, I believe. I don't remember what it's like relative to the NBA off the top of my head, but here's where Jeremy Pena stands. Not in first. for shortstop votes. That's Gunnar Henderson, who has 1,551,124 votes. By the way, what? The Orioles suck. They suck. They're one of the worst teams in baseball this year. They've been the biggest disappointment in baseball this year. Bobby Witt Jr. is in second place with 987,000 votes. How does he have 600,000 more votes? Is there like a Norwegian vote or something like that? Sorry to get a little bit, I don't know, xenophobic here, but I'm seeing his name Gunnar, and I'm assuming that the guy's from like Iceland or Norway or something. Sorry. Anthony Volpe, this is stupid. Always a Yankee at the top, is third with 537,000 votes. Corey Seager of the Rangers, 490,000. Bo Bichette of the Blue Jays, 400,000. Jeremy Pena is in sixth among AL All-Stars when it comes to voting, with just 352,000 votes. Gunnar Henderson has nearly five times as many votes as him. Isn't that wild?
Yeah. He's got all of, you said, where'd you say that you thought he was from?
Iceland, Norway, whatever.
Montgomery, fighting. Alabama is where he's from. Close, I would say. But he's got all of Montgomery, Alabama voting for him.
Hang on a second.
I think starting the All-Star game might be out of the cards for Jeremy Pena. Which isn't right. It's not fair. But I think it's out of the cards.
Clean up aisle me. And this, honestly, is a reflection because this is something I was looking up on the fly. Just to see, hey, where does Jeremy Pena rank? The link that I put in, get what the first link that came up for on Google for the AL All-Star game voting was for. It was for June 24th of 2024. So I was looking at last year's numbers. So that makes sense for Gunnar Henderson getting that. Clean up on aisle May. It happens. That's a terrible job by Major League Baseball where that's the first link. When you look at MLB All-Star results, here's June 24th of last year.
Yeah, I did look up how the reserves get picked because, like you, I am unsure of how the reserves of the All-Star game get picked. Finalists who... hold on.
This is ridiculous. This website, you go up to All-Star Voting, and it says it just answers a bunch of questions. It's like frequently asked questions.
Yes, that's what I'm looking at, too.
This is like going on a website where you're looking for the customer support line.
Yes.
You want an email or you want a phone number? This is, by the way, baseball's All-Star Voting. You can't see the actual votes. You can't see the voting at this moment in time.
Yeah, I'm just at the FAQs.
We're less than a month away from the All-Star game, by the way. We get FAQs instead of the actual effing numbers? How is the sport not dead? How is it not dead? And sure, I screwed up here, but how? How do I see the voting? What is this website? What are we doing? What an unprofessional league. It's an unprofessional show. You expect this from us. From this? Outrageous. But what I do know is this. Pena is going to need your help to get to the All-Star game. Why is Jeremy Pena going to need your help to get to the All-Star game? Because he is an Astro. People will look the other way. And on top of that, there will be other guys who are getting an alarming amount of votes that are undue. You know what's the third thing that comes up when you look up like MLB All-Star ballot voting? WNBA All-Star voting sweepstakes and voting results. I'm not kidding. This might be a Google problem, in fact. Anyway.
I mean, Google is like much worse than it used to be. It's just like that happens a lot where I'll look something up for this year and I'll see last year's thing before I see this year's. It's very, very frustrating. But on the FAQs, I think the All-Star process might be too complicated if you need a page full of FAQs where there's phase two of fan voting. Because
there's phase one.
Starters are voted by the fans. Phase one is to get the leading All-Star vote getter.
Phase one, help your favorites advance. Phase two, June 30th through July 2nd, vote for the starters. Wait, huh?
Wait, what did I just do in phase one then? I think it's... You can vote for anybody at any or anyone in their specific position in phase one. Phase two, it's like just the finalists at those positions. So basically phase two is like, all right, cut the nonsense out and like, hey, sorry Mariners or Marlins fans, you're not gonna get Marlins and you're gonna get one Marlin in the All-Star game. So your ballot of putting your entire lineup, that's cute. We're not actually going to take that into account. Now, let's actually vote. So I think Pena has to be a top three guy in phase one.
You would think. I mean, if you look at his numbers relative to all the other shortstops that are on it, Jacob Wilson is really the only guy who has numbers that look better because he's hitting .367. But after that, when you're looking at shortstops in the American League, he is the only one that's got a average north of .300. And okay, you want to look at the home runs and all of that. No one's really coming away from the pack in terms of home runs. The home run leader at this moment in time is Zach Nieto with 10. Pena's got 9. Pena, on average, seems to have the best numbers after Jacob Wilson.
Yeah, to me, it's Jacob Wilson, it's Pena, and then you're fighting the All-Star game, like, name bias of whether it is a Yankee, whether it is, I guess there's not a Red Sox shortstop that you're going up against, but, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. from the Royals, where it's a guy who's viewed as one of the best players in baseball, even though in the first however many games of the season, his numbers aren't far and away better than these guys. There's just a name value of, like, people go and they go, oh, Bobby Witt Jr. Yeah, sure, vote for him. It's either guy on a team with a huge fan base or a superstar from past seasons. I would say that's Pena's chief rivals after, you know, of course, the bitter AL West rivalry he has with Jacob Wilson. You know how we all have opinions on Jacob Wilson.
Yeah, big time.
I think when the Astros played the A's the first time this season, or maybe the most recent time this season, my thoughts on Jacob Wilson was, wow, good average. I think that was it. Well, I was like, wow, he's hitting the ball pretty well.
I'm really frustrated with how we cannot figure out how to look at
the results.
Results just now. I think it's wild that you can't see them.
There should be like live results where as I put in my ballot, I can see the number go up.
I mean, well, it's the effing internet. I mean, it shouldn't be that hard. How is baseball? Anyway, whatever. Let's talk football. Sorry, baseball. You lost me.
We
lost the plot. We tried so hard. We got so far. But in the end, it didn't really matter. It's the Paul Gallant Show, most interactive sports talk show in town. Does a Houston Texan regret his new home? Stick around on the other side. We continue our countdown to the start.
Yes!
Currently at, take a look at the number. Of course, man, I just do not trust. I just do not trust Google right now. Google just lied again. They have turned things over to AI, and it just does not work anymore.
It does feel like, and I'll give you a couple of seconds here to look it up. It does feel like we're doing with AI, we're turning over the offense to someone to a quarterback who isn't quite ready to play in the NFL.
No, they're
we're
not.
We're really turning over to AI where, like, AI still is not better than, like, normal Google.
No. It's frustrating. 80 days away. My favorite ever player, Troy Brown from the New England Patriots. 3-time Super Bowl champion. Best as a wide receiver, but played every single position. In the slot, punt returner, special teams demon. Hell, he even played defensive back in the playoffs while wearing number 80. So Troy Brown's my favorite number 80. Best number 80 in NFL history. You guessed it. It's also Troy Brown. I'm not biased at all. I think there's another wide receiver who wore number 80. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. But that guy may have called out the greatest dynasty that ever existed while using Stick'Em on his hand. So I'm just going to conveniently look the other way for a moment and remember a couple of other number 80s. Steve Largent, Seahawks wide receiver, went on to be an office holder. I believe he was a congressman. You got Isaac Bruce, part of the greatest show on turf, Rams. You got Chris Carter, Mr. Fall Guy himself. And yeah, there's Jerry Rice. I know, there's Jerry Rice.
Andre Johnson.
Andre Johnson, before Jerry Rice.
yes. But good group there. At the end.
80's a good one. We're about to get into some weird lineman territory over the next couple of days. Sorry in advance.
To me, the 50s and 40s is really when we're stretching it. 70s, yeah. Like we got some tackles, you know. We can deal with that. Once you get into interior linemen, linebackers, and then the 40s, we're like, no one wears numbers.
There's some good 40s, but and 50s has the linebackers. I think it's 60 through 79. Also, those numbers just suck. Like if you're a lineman, offensive lineman, like you're kind of forced to have a number in the 60s or 70s. But I'd want a number in the 50s if I were an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And because it makes you seem less fat. It does.
I was going to say 60 is a tough, like there's no cool number in the 60s.
None. 69.
Yeah.
Other than that.
But yeah, only one guy gets to wear that.
Right. 64, kind of cool. It's 8 squared.
I mean,
it's 4 to the 4th power, bro.
They don't. None of these look cool on a jersey.
That's just. No, yeah. 4 to the 4th power. How about that? Paul does math.
True?
I don't know. I just made that up. Paul Galacho. We don't do math. 713-780-3776 to call, to text, YouTube at ESPN Houston, Twitch at ESPN 975. The Cincinnati Bengals are prowling back towards Trey Hendrickson. They're at the very least talking to him again. So that's nice. We also found out that apparently the detail that Shamar Stewart is refusing to sign a contract over is because the Bengals decided this year to tweak the default language in the standard rookie deals that they gave out. So I guess the Bengals are changing things up completely, where Shamar Stewart's agent is trying to use the precedent that the Bengals have set before. And the Bengals are refusing to offer anything as they change this up. Does not seem like Mike Brown read the art of the deal. Does take two to tango. Perhaps he's just, you know, watching things that are happening. He's like, yeah, if I put a tariff on this contract, it'll work out in the long run for me or something. I don't know. I don't know much about tariffs. I'm just trying to use the current event as an example. But it's not working out so well. But at the very least, they're talking to Trey Hendrickson again. Talking.
Love it. Love, if I'm a Bengals fan, I'm super excited from what I've seen for my franchise.
At least he's not traded yet. I would be excited about that. It's always possible, but it would be a year later that it would happen after he sits out for a full season like what happened with Carson Palmer.
Yeah. No. It's tough. It's tough because in the offseason, this is what we talk about with the Bengals. And then once the season starts, well, normally they go like 1-3 to start. And then they turn into one of the best teams in the AFC. So it will be hard to like switch my brain into like, oh, wait, this is where Joe Burrow plays now, not where Mike Brown gets to kind of mismanage them. Although they've had more success than like you'd think with a terrible owner.
Yeah, they made it to a Super Bowl. I don't know if Mike Brown was running the show when, and I doubt it because it would have been nearly 50 years ago.
Oh.
40 to 50 years ago. Because the Bengals did make it to 2 Super Bowls in the 80s, and they lost to the San Francisco 49ers in both of those Super Bowls. So I believe Mike Brown, damn, he's 89 years old. Maybe he was in charge. He assumed ownership in 1991. So Paul Brown, okay, who the Browns are named after, was the original owner of the Bengals.
Not surprising that's when they made the Super Bowls.
Also, classic the Browns, right? Like, they pissed off, like, their best ever guy. They pissed off the namesake, and he created a rival team in-state. But, yeah, it has been rough for the Bengals. We'll see if things get cleaned up. Miami Dolphins, they got a great fight song, and that's about all they got. Dumbass owner and Stephen Ross. And let's just be honest, we've heard this before, something that Tua Tagovailoa said this offseason. We got a new culture here in Miami. Things are different this time around. Okay, sure, there's a culture shift. I'll believe it when I see it. Mike McDaniel, as part of the culture shift, has been cussing a little bit more. Here he is getting rather nihilist when asked about Jalen Ramsey trade conversations. Remember, Jalen Ramsey asked out of Miami a couple of weeks ago.
Surprising, it's taken this long to find a resolution with the team.
I don't personally, and I would lump you into this with me. I don't give a about what I feel. I'm not. I don't even really go down that road of how do I feel about it? My job is to react and control my controllables and make sure that people are moving in one direction appropriately. And so the business is business. The opportunity that business does provide in the off season is a rep to the team about handling noise. What do I define noise as? Noise is things that don't have to do with what actually you're there to do and you should be focused on doing because you'll be held accountable to do.
All right, that was a lot of words, Mike. I will say, started off strong. I don't give a bleep how I feel, but trailed off a little bit there. I like Mike McDaniel mainly because he is a childhood friend of one of my favorite comedians, Dan Soder. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know
that. They grew up together. Wow. They're boys. They've been boys for a while. Huh. So I like Mike McDaniel and I want him to succeed. Maybe not with the Miami Dolphins, but you come back to minicamp and you're being asked about Jalen Ramsey requesting out of town again. You got Tyreek Hill and all his crap going on as well. It's got to suck to be him. I don't care how I feel. I care how you feel, Mike McDaniel. I feel bad for you. I think you're in a tough spot.
I do enjoy that he like actually tries to. It's a little bit of CJ Stroud. He actually tries to answer the questions.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there he did just trail off into. Once he said control the controllables, I was like, coach speak mode.
Coach speak.
Engaged. Where it's about how we do the things we do because we do them and the question is, do we do them well? I'm like, you're saying the word do a lot, all right? We could have cut this a little bit earlier.
There's a very good chance that he gives an answer at first, and then he just goes on autopilot. Yeah. He's like, why am I here? This sucks.
Ask me about this guy. He asked me for a trade.
It's like when I do a filibuster when we're trying to get something ready to go or when I'm looking for something that I just Googled. It's the same kind of thing. He definitely goes into autopilot and is no longer there. More from Mike McDaniel. He loves cussing. Here he is talking about old Zach Wilson, who is now a Miami Dolphin.
Curious, what's impressed you the most about him? Anything unexpected that you've seen from him so far?
There's residuals to people, just in general, that have gone through things. But as a football player, he's come close to about as much scrutiny as one could have. And he looks like a guy that has been through some and found his way through it.
Ah. We'll see what Zach Wilson does. I mean, he's in more leap because now Quinn Ewers got drafted. So, third string quarterback probably right now?
I don't know. I mean, probably competition at least. I Zach Wilson, year what? 4 and 5 in the NFL?
Feels like it's been longer.
You gotta beat a 7th round pick. But, I don't know if he can.
Quinn shouldn't have been a 7th round pick, though. Don't you think?
The NFL is trying to send him a message, trying to humble him.
Yeah. They're trying to humble him and trying to humble Shedeur Sanders at the same time.
People don't talk about it as much as the other guy.
No, they don't. No.
Mel Kiper doesn't care about Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's true. Honestly, I'm kind of offended by that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we all know what we're talking about here. Quarterbacks who transfer.
Yeah.
Which Shedeur Sanders did, too.
Yeah.
Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5, 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call up the text, YouTube at ESPN Houston, Twitch at ESPN 975. The Rockets, they brought back Steven Adams, but they're also big game hunting. The latest in their pursuit of a top star next. Stick around. Kevin Durant is down to 3 teams that he'd want to join via a trade from the Phoenix Suns, the San Antonio Spurs, the Miami Heat, and your Houston Rockets. So, how close are things to actually going down? Well, it seems on the Rockets' front, things are not that close. Here is ESPN's Tim McMahon, who's about as plugged in as it gets when it comes to national media talking Rockets, talking about discussions between the two with Brian Windhorst.
You know, I know I'm best sourced in Houston. I think they would really like to have Kevin Durant. at what they consider to be a reasonable cost, which I don't think the Suns are would consider to be an appealing return.
More from Windhorst today. The Phoenix Suns are not excited about the current offers they're receiving from the Rockets, Heat, and Spurs. That was reported by Brian Windhorst. So that could work out in all three teams' favor. The market's not what the Suns want. It does feel like even though the Suns do not want to give up Durant as a discount, as Windhorst said just a moment ago, that they ultimately may be forced to take less than they want.
Yeah, he might just not have a robust market just because, A, the age, the fact he'll likely need a new contract. He has 1 year remaining, and from all reports would like to go somewhere where he would get a contract extension. So it's very easy for him to pick at least one of three teams that he could play for by saying, I will not sign an extension with you. And in turn, that team now is like, well, we're not giving up that much for 1 year of a guy.
Right.
So he can kind of steer it a little bit that way. And that's how the Suns won't be impressed by what they get, because there's not a bidding war, really.
Right, exactly.
It's three teams that have leverage over the Suns.
There is one other team that I guess is sniffing around, and get this, Kevin Durant said, nope. Sham Sharania reported about 40 minutes ago. Kevin Durant has no desire to be in Minnesota with the Timberwolves.
Yeah, not great. Or not great for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, that's got to be frustrating if you're the Wolves, because it does feel like maybe Durant helps you get closer than he helps any of these other teams. You know, San Antonio is still not a playoff contender, at least right now. 1:53 p.m. on June 16th. The Rockets say they bring in Durant. Great. But are they then on Minnesota's level because they have that extra offensive piece? Are they better than Minnesota? Maybe, but that's certainly not a fact. It's debatable and would require Durant to stay healthy, too. So that sucks for Minnesota. I think if Minnesota brought in Durant, I do think that that puts them a little bit closer to potentially going further than they went the last 2 years, where I think you would definitely argue that they were disappointing now that it's happened back-to-back seasons, that they were out as early as they were, even if the Thunder were not losing to anybody along the way.
Yeah, it is just disappointing where you lose in the same round back-to-back years. Like, that just in general is disappointing. But you're right that they are the best team, or at least the team most that's most positioned for immediate success after a Durant trade, and that's the one that he's not as interested in.
They need help for Anthony Edwards. I mean, that's like they need somebody else.
Yeah, they need another guy. They need either Randall to be better, or they need a guy to be better than Randall.
Right. I don't think you're going to get a lot more out of Randall. And Gobert is a defensive weapon. He is not
an offensive weapon.
He's not going to help you out.
He's terrible on offense. He's like bad on offense.
Yeah, he's one of the worst offensive players in the league.
Yeah.
So that's the latest on Kevin Durant. It doesn't feel like the Rockets are any closer to bringing him in.
It doesn't feel like anyone's that much closer. Like, I guess we have a top three, is what I would say, is that we have a three-team race,
right?
To me, unless one of these teams that aren't a preferred destination by Durant, unless one of these other teams come, you know, bleep it, let's make it happen no matter what. Even if we do get them for 1 year, like, we're willing to put together an offer that could beat what Houston wants to give up. Because it seems like Houston can make this deal happen whenever it wants. It does seem like Houston's really playing hardball here.
They should. I wonder what the offer is.
Yeah.
It seems like Jalen Green's involved, given that in some of the reporting about the trade talks, this from Hoops Hype, Phoenix has done background on Jalen Green to gauge his value around the league in case Green is acquired, and it's worthwhile to flip him again via trade.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, Phoenix.
It's very funny. That to me is interesting, that they're not wow. The Windhorse is saying that they're not wowed by their the offers that they're receiving. With the speculation for what the Houston package is, there has to be a mismatch there. Like, there's one part that's not correct, that Rockets fans are like, oh my God, there's not a chance in the world we would give up Jalen Green, Jabari Smith, the 10th pick, and whatever you need to make the salaries work. Like, that is a draft haul that, or the trade haul that seems to have, I'm not going to say zero, has like 20% approval rating among Rockets fans. But on the same side, for the Suns, they're like, we're not enthused by this offer. So either they don't like Green, or that one of the reporting isn't, you know, up to snuff. Like, maybe that's not what the Rockets are actually offering. They might be offering a worse package than that one.
That makes sense. I really want to see what these offers are.
I would love if...
Very funny tweet from Adam Spillane. It wouldn't surprise me if the Rockets refused to put any picks on the table for Durant. I have a feeling the Durant offers Phoenix is getting are horrible. And it does make sense because everyone thinks their owner's an idiot.
Yeah. I would love some sort of service. Or, like, you know, you remember the Disney Vault back in the day with, like, the Disney, like, VHSs? Like, they would just stop making them, so it goes in the Disney Vault. And it's like... How you create scarcity for the 1950s cartoons that they made.
Right, exactly.
I would love if there's some sort of, like, trade offers vault where after, because it's all personality driven, like, you can't say it right at, like, hey, this was our offer for Durant and we lost. I would love, though, after 5 years, they open up the vault and they're like, here's what we offered the Suns for Durant.
I just want a log of every... trade offer, every phone call.
Like, here's what they turned down.
As soon as the person is fired, I want to see all of it.
Yeah.
Immediately after they're fired.
Because I would love to know what Rafael Stone is offering.
Yeah.
If he's not offering any first-round picks.
It would be really funny if it's just a terrible offer. If he's offering Jeff Green, it just says Jay Green. Oh, yeah. Trust me. Jay Green.
Yeah. So we got Green in the deal.
Yeah, Green's in here. That would be so funny. If Stone did that, I would actually, I'd gain a lot of respect for him. By the way, I'm getting more and more respect for him by the day. Sean Mace behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It's the Paul Gallant Show, most interactive sports talk show in town. 713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston and on Twitch at ESPN 975. Astros got a sweep over the weekend. Finally! But how the hell did they do it? I'm still at a loss. Stick around. ESPN.